We're holding on Chof Dalet Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom, line begins Be'ilon. We were discussing, now the Mishnah had told us that if a person makes a sukkah between the trees, so we're not talking about like we did a couple of days ago where a person uses the trees themselves as a support for the walls and floor of a sukkah according to Rashi, or a support for the schach of a sukkah according to Tosfos. We're not talking about that. We already said such a sukkah is kosher. You just can't use it on Yom Tov because Midrabanan, you're not allowed to use a tree on Yom Tov. Here we're talking about where you built the sukkah on the ground and the trees are serving as the walls of the sukkah. So we said that's fine. However, we had Rav Acha by Yaakov telling us that if you have a mechitza that moves back and forth in the wind, then that's not a valid mechitza. So we talked about briefly yesterday, we talked about briefly on Friday about how that is with canvas sukkahs. I mean, one difference is over here, conceivably, the branches of the tree are only anchored at one end. The other end is free to move as they wish, and they're free to move with the wind, and therefore that might be a problem. So we said that the case must be, therefore, that that you weave hutza v'dafna, which we said hutza are lulav leaves, dafna are laurel leaves or branches, and of course it doesn't mean dafna those are just the typical kinds of things they would use for that in those days. You wove them between the branches such that the branches are staying put in one place. So we said in that case, the chiddush of the Mishnah is, you still might think that in that case it's considered using a tree on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, and it should be aser, and therefore we're being told that not. But not to say that it would be fine as is with the branches just swaying in the wind. Okay. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof about this matter of a swaying mechitza, of trees as a mechitza. We've talked a few times in the Masechta, and we learned back in Masechta Eruvin about the concept of Pasei Beirois, also called Dyumdin, where we said that when you have a well in Rosh Hashanah, that the Oile Regel want to be able to water their animals from, and the well itself is Rosh Hashanah. So Midaraita, it would be fine. Midarabanan, it's not. But the same Chachamim, which said it's also said what you can do is you can put up, so what it is it actually Daraisa would be also as well, because in Rosh Hashanah, but whatever. The Chachamim said that since on a Daraisa level, it's enough to have a semblance of four walls, then therefore what we do is you put L-shaped poles by each of the four corners, making sure that they're not more than a certain distance apart, 10 amos or 13 and a third amos, according to the different opinions there in Eruvin. And then that way, when you look from each direction, you see a semblance of a wall on two sides, even though there's a big gap in between. That's enough for it to be considered a Rosh Hashanah Yochid on a Daraisa level, and now you're able to water your animals. So we learned that you don't necessarily need to have an actual L-shaped pole over there. It's enough that you have something over there which is large enough that you could conceivably turn into such a pole by carving it out. So Abraisa says, Hoyasham Elon, if there is a tree over there in one of the corners, a geder or fence, in each of these cases, in other words, where it's wide enough that you could, that it would form an ama in each direction, an ama, let's say, towards the east and an ama towards the north, or any other directions. Or there's a mechitza made out of reeds, a bunch of reeds growing close together. Nidin mishum diyumod, then it counts as a diyumod, which is one of those four L-shaped pillars. So the point is, in other words, we're seeing that the tree or the reeds count as one of the four corners of the mechitza, even though on the face of it the branches move. And again, the answer is again. We have to understand that there we're talking about also we weave chutzah and dafna into it in order to make it a more solid thing that's not going to sway in the wind. Okay. Tashma, the Gemara says, let's bring another proof. A braisa says, Ilan hamesach ala oretz, a tree where the branches of it hang down close to the ground. Im ein noifer gevoyim in a oretz shloshet vachim, if the ends of the branches are less than 3 tefachim off the ground, and less than 3 tefachim, we say lowered, metalfil and tachtav, then we're allowed to carry underneath that tree, because now it's considered. In other words, the branches start out high up, but they droop down until within 3 tefachim of the ground. So there, when you're standing under the tree, you're standing within a mechitza. And therefore, that's fine. So again, the question is, amai haka'ozo va'asi? Isn't it the same problem? The branches sway back and forth. Based on Rabbi Acha by Yaakov's rule, it shouldn't be, good morning, Ellie. It shouldn't be mutter to do that, because fine, you have a mechitza over there, but since it's swaying, since the branches sway back and forth in a normal wind, it shouldn't be considered a mechitza. And the answer is hasanami, the avad lebo hutzva dafna. Again, you could answer that you're weaving hutzva dafna, palm leaves or laurel leaves or whatever, between the branches of the tree, and that way anchoring them in place so they don't move around, so they don't move around during Shabbos. By the way, I mean, this that we have in the Gemara over and over, the different questions with the same answer, sometimes Mephoshim say that what it is in different yeshivas, they ask different questions on this din, and each one they came up independently with the same answer. And then when Ravina and Ravashi collated and compiled the Gemara, then they included all of those. Here actually Mephoshim talk about different reasons why each one of them might be, even if they were all in one Beis Medrash, nevertheless, once one was asked, nevertheless, they asked another one because they thought that this one is a stronger question. And each time they say that nevertheless, this is the answer. For example, the first time we're saying we're answering Hutzav Adapna, but the second time when it comes to the Diyumdin, we would argue then what's the Chiddush. In our Mishnah, fine, you have the Chiddush that you're not allowed to use a tree on, that you're not allowed to use a tree on Shabbos. And nevertheless, we're saying you're allowed to use the trees as the walls of your sukkah. But why would that explain? So what about in the case of the Diyumdin, where you're using a tree as one of the four corners? On the face of it, there's not as much of a Chiddush that if you weave it with hoots of a daphna. And the answer is, nevertheless, that's what it means. And then continuing with this one also, that each one is a chiddush compared to the previous one. Okay. So the question is, okay, so if you're telling me the case is, again, you have the branches of the tree droop down to within three tefachim of the ground, therefore we're saying they constitute, therefore it's close enough to the ground to constitute a mechitza, and based on Rav Acha bar Yaakov's rule, what we say is then you weave a chutz of a dafna between the branches in order to make them stay put. And thus you have a mechitza. The question is, if you're going to say like that, so it comes out, this isn't a natural mechitza anymore. Now you have, this is a mechitza that's partially man-made, because you put the hutz of a daphne over there. In that case, then on the face of it, you should be able to carry under the entire foliage of that tree, under all the branches of that tree, even if the area enclosed by the branches of the tree is larger than base sasayim, which we learned in Eruvin, that you have an area of 5,000 square amos, which was the size of the chotzer of the Mishkan. Up to that point, you're allowed to carry it in an enclosed area, no matter what purpose it was enclosed for. Beyond that, 5,000 square amos or more, you're allowed to carry it in only if it was hukaf madira, only if it was fenced in or surrounded by a wall or a fence or whatever for the purpose of living in it. Now, in the face of it, if you're putting in hoots of a daphne here between the branches of the tree to be able to carry under it, then you're doing it. L'shem dira, you want to live under that tree for Shabbos. So in that case, you should be allowed to carry under the entire tree, no matter how large the area is. Alama omer of hunabedi reshua. Then why does Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua say that in that case you're only allowed to carry it up to base sasayim? In other words, the Gemara is saying like this. If we stuck with our original assumption that we're talking about the branches are just hanging there loose and you're allowed to carry under it, well, yeah, those branches are hanging loose. They weren't made by Gei Adam. So therefore, you could say that therefore the rule of base sasayim applies. But now that you're telling me that we have to add hutz of a daphna in order to make a wall, in order to make a mechitza that's not going to move around, then that's a mechitza asuya bidei adam, that's man-made. So why are you limited to base sasayim? And the answer is, there's a different consideration. Mishum dehavid dira shetashmi she'el la'avir. Because it is a dwelling that was made by human hands, fine, but it was made not for the purpose of it itself inside, it's really made for the purpose of the area outside of it. In other words, who's going to live under a tree for Shabbos? It would be, Rashi gives an example, let's say he's there in order to watch the fields so that thieves don't break in or something. So fundamentally, it's not really there for itself, it's really there in order to guard the area outside it. So therefore, so that can't be that. So then you have the rule. So in such a case, the rule of base sasayim still applies. Such a dira is not important enough to be considered a dira when it's used for the area outside. when you have, in other words, if you have, let's say, an animal pen or something like that, things like that, where the area inside the fence is what's significant to you, then yeah, if it's more than beis sasayim, then that's fine because you did it l'shem zira. You intend, let's say you're a shepherd and you're living there with the animals over Shabbos. But here, nobody's living under the tree with you. You're not having a whole bungalow colony there under the tree. You're just fencing in that tree, so you have an area on Shabbos that you'll be able to stand guard over the field and be able to carry your stuff inside. So then we say you're limited to beis sasayim. Nothing to do with the question of whether the mechitzas were made b'day adam or not. Okay. The Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof. A braita says, Shavas b'teil shu gavoya asara. If a person spends Shabbos, now here we're going to talk about that as it relates to the dinim of Tchum Shabbos, which it's actually today's Shloisha Prakim of Rambam. Ashkacha Pratis is talking about these dinim of Erev Tchumim. Anyway, we know that a person has 2,000 amos outside of his Mokim Shvisa. Now, his makam shvisa is defined as either the four amos that he's in, if the area, as we're going to say, is not a defined area. Otherwise, he has the entire defined area that he's in, and 2,000 amos outside of that. So the braisa says, shavas b'teil shu gavoya asara. If a person spends Shabbos on a mound of dirt, which is at least 10 tefachim tall, v'hu me arba amos ad beis sasayim, and the width of it is anywhere from 4 amos until beis sasayim. So the point is, less than 4 amos doesn't matter, Rashi explains, because in any case, you have 4 amos around your spot on Shabbos, so therefore, we wouldn't have to talk about, if the place is only 3 amos by 3 amos, let's say, you still have 4 by 4 amos to work with anyway, and you start counting your 2,000 outside of it. But it can't be larger than beis sasayim, again, because it wasn't fenced in, l'shem dira. So there is a different explanation that some of the Rishonim say. The reason why we're saying at least 4 amos is we're talking about the slope up to the top of it. If the slope up to the top of this tail is less than 4 amos, then good, then those count as mechitzas. If the slope is gentler than that, for example, it reaches a height of 10 tefachim only within 5 amos or more, then it's just considered part of the ground around it, and then it's not considered, then it doesn't have any special status of its own. Then it doesn't have mechitzas of its own, is the point. Anyway, v'chein b'neka, the same way continues the braisa, if a person is spending Shabbos in a ditch, shu omek asora, which is again at least 10 tefachim deep, v'hu ba'aba amos at beis sasayim, and it's anywhere from 4 amos until beis sasayim, so then in the case of a ditch, obviously he has mechitzas around him. In the case of where the first case of a tell of a mound of dirt, the mechitzas are virtual mechitzas, we say good asif, we take the height of the mound and consider it as though it was vertical walls surrounding him. V'chein komach tzura, and the same way continues the braisa. Suppose he's spending Shabbos in a harvested field, v'shiboylus makifo yisaisa, but you still have, let's say, the edges of the field were not yet harvested, and you have stalks of grain still growing from the edges of the field, and of course we have to assume that these stalks are at least 10 tefachim tall. Mahalachas kula, in all those cases, he's allowed to walk throughout that whole area. That doesn't count yet as part of his tchum because it's an area surrounded by mechitzas. And again, it's less than beis sasayim. Therefore, all of that area is considered his spot for Shabbos. It's almost as if like he was in a city and then the tchum begins only outside of that. V'chutzalah paimama, and then he has 2,000 amos beyond that. Again, afagab de ka'ozu v'osu. Now, stalks of grain are going to sway in the wind, and yet we seem to be saying that that's fine, that's considered a mechitza for him. According to Rabbi Acha Yaakov's rule, why should that be? And the answer is again, Hosam Nami, the Ovid Leib Hutza V'Dafna. Again, we have to answer that we're talking about that he wove Hutza and Dafna in between the stalks of grain, and therefore he converted it into a mechitza that's going to stand still, that's not going to move around. Which Tosfos says, here, where you have, it's only open to the air. Now, on the face of it, you know, we answered when it came to the tree that it was Dira Shetash Mishael La'aver, that it was a dwelling whose sole purpose is for the area outside it rather than inside it. Nobody willingly spends Shabbos under a tree. They're doing it only in order to guard a field or something. Wouldn't you say the same thing over here? Now, over here, it's the opposite. On the face of it, it is for the purpose of the area inside because that's where you're planning to spend Shabbos. and you're not doing it for the purpose of any area outside of it. So why do we say you're limited to Beis Tosayim if you're using Hutz of a Dafna? Tosfos answers, because on the other hand, here it has a disadvantage compared to the area under the tree, namely that it's just open to the air. It's just there's no roof above it. So therefore, that can't be considered Mukaf Ladira, even if that can't be considered Mukaf Ladira, and therefore you're limited to Beis Tosayim. On to a new topic. Now we've been dealing with more dinim about where you can construct your sukkah and how you do it and so forth. Now let's move along to dinim about how you sit in the sukkah. We know, as the Gemara is going to talk about later on, that the pasuk says basukas teishvu shivas yomim, you should live for 7 days in the sukkah, and we learn that it means teishvu ke'en taduru, you have to dwell in the sukkah like you dwell in your house year round. So that's going to affect certain dinim as far as the sukkah. So the Mishnah starts off shluchei mitzvah p'turim min sukkah. People who are on their way to do a mitzvah, Rashi gives some examples, to learn Torah, or to welcome his Rebbe, which we're going to talk about later, Chayav Adam Lahakel Pnei Rabbi Beregel, a person is obligated to visit his Rebbe on Yom Tov, or for example, Pidyon Shvuyim, so he's on the way to do a mitzvah, Pturin, Minas Sukkah, they are potter from Sukkah, Rashi says, even while they're camping. Needless to say, they're not Chayav in a Sukkah while they're traveling, because that's going to prevent them from doing their mitzvah, but the point is, even while they're stopped, for a period of time, there's still potter from sukkah. Because trying to find a sukkah or build a sukkah or whatever is going to distract them from the mission that they're on. Tosfos says now that, you know, this rule of shluchei mitzvah, turim and mitzvah is obviously not an absolute rule. I mean, we don't say, for example, that a person, let's say, who's wearing tzitzis or wearing tefillin is potter from other mitzvahs at that time. So Tosfos explains, when you're oisik in the mitzvah, then that's when you're potter from other mitzvahs. So the same way over here, the point is, we're not talking about, let's say, the person is on his way for Pidyon Shvuyim or to learn Torah or whatever, and he's passing through a place where he has to stop for the night anyway, and there's a sukkah over there. Obviously, he's not potter from sukkah in that case. We're talking about where having to go and look for a sukkah or having to go build a sukkah of his own is going to interfere with his journey of going to do the mitzvah. That's when we're saying he's potter. Though Rishonim will point out another angle on it also, which is when a person puts on tefillin or puts on tzitzis, for example, they accomplish the mitzvah at the time they're putting it on, they're not necessarily continuing to accomplish a mitzvah the whole time it's on them. Therefore, so that would be a reason that we say that they're chayiv in other mitzvahs even while they're wearing tzitzis or tefillin. But here we're talking about that the whole time they're oisik in the mitzvah. The Aruch HaNer, by the way, gets into an interesting discussion about whether this applies to mitzvahs d'rabbanan as well, whether we say that oisik mitzvah, potter min ha-mitzvah. We're going to talk at some length in the Gemara about the source of this concept of oisik mitzvah, potter min ha-mitzvah, and the parameters of it. But anyway, there is an interesting point that's mentioned in a number of places in Chassidus, that I've brought it a number of times in Sichas, that the deeper reason why Osef the Mitzvah, Potem and Mitzvah, is because you have, on the one hand, each mitzvah has its own advantages and its own details and whatever, and each one is mevarer a different area of the world. On the other hand, they have all of this in common, all mitzvahs have this in common, that they're all the Rotzin of Hashem. So at that level, therefore, when you're doing one mitzvah, you're accomplishing, in a certain sense, what the other mitzvah would have accomplished as well, and therefore you're potter from the other mitzvah. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Cholin u'mashamshein p'turim min ha-sukkah. People who are sick, or the attendants on the person who is sick, p'turim min ha-sukkah, they are also potter from sukkah. Because then again, this is the case called mitzair, where a person is having physical discomfort from sitting in the sukkah, and in that case, then it's not teishvu ke'en daduru. A person wouldn't necessarily stay in their house if they were feeling that kind of discomfort either. And we'll see the details about that in the Gemara. Another din, oichlin v'shoysin arai chutz l'sukkah, you're allowed to eat or drink a snack outside the sukkah, and we're going to see tomorrow, on Bez Hashem, what the shiur of a snack is. So the Gemara says, Minohani Mili. Where do we know the first point that we said in the Mishnah, that Shluchei Mitzvah, potter from Sukkah, where do we see that from? So But the Tanan Rabbanan, like this, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says in Krishma, Vishiv Techa Bevesecha, that you should be learning Torah and doing the other mitzvahs, when you're sitting in your house. That means prapla osik b'mitzvah. That means as a part, only when you're sitting in your house and doing your own activities or whatever, not when you're involved in doing a mitzvah. We're going to see soon. The Gemara is going to ask, what does that mean? You could be sitting in a house and doing a mitzvah at the same time. So we'll get to that soon. Uvelech techav aderech prapla chosam. And when it continues, when you walk on the road, that comes to include also a chosan who is about to get married. Now, Rashi explains why we need a separate limud for him. He's also involved in a mitzvah, namely that he's going to be getting married, and in particular, he's going to be doing the mitzvah of the ilas mitzvah, the first time he has relations with his kala. But Rashi explains, the point is that if we only had one of those things, if it only said b'shiv t'chav v'secha, you would say, yeah, when a person is doing something via dayim, or he's walking on the way, then you can pater him from other mitzvahs. But a chosen, what's preventing him from saying krishma or doing the other mitzvahs, it's not that he's physically doing something. His mind is preoccupied with the thought of the be'ila that he's going to do it properly. Is his kala going to be a besula, etc. So therefore, you wouldn't have known that he's potter were it not for a special pasuk to that effect. Overlap the chavaderech. Tosfos actually brings that. Tosfos brings a girsa from the Gemara in Brachas that actually has it the other way around. B'shiv t'chav v'secha is excludes the chosan, overlap the chavaderech excludes the other people who are doing other mitzvahs as well. So therefore, mikan amru, based on this, the Chachamim said, hakonis is a b'sula potter, a chosan who is marrying a b'sula is potter, because again, he's concerned about the question of is she going to be a b'sula. At this point, the Gemara doesn't know that yet. At this point, when we're quoting the Braisa, the Gemara thinks that the tirda is just the preoccupation that he has with the wedding itself and with the be'ilas mitzvah and so forth. The Gemara doesn't yet realize that there should be a reason to distinguish between a besula and an almana. I mean, the Braisa is telling us that, but we're going to have to figure out why that is. So Akonis is a besula potter versus almana chayev. If he's marrying a besula, then he's potter from saying krishma. If he's marrying an almana, or grusha, or any woman who's previously had relations, then he's chayev in krishma. By the way, that halacha doesn't really apply nowadays, because nowadays we don't say krishma with such concentration anyway. Adrabah, if a chosim were to say, I'm not going to say krishma because I can't concentrate, that would be mechsi ki yuhara, that would appeal like he's showing off pride, he's showing off gaiva, look at me, I usually have such kavana in shema, and now I can't. So therefore nowadays the halacha is that a chosim is chayv in krishma as well. We'll touch on that later in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, my mashma, where do we see from the word b'shiv t'chav v'secha that it means somebody who's not oisik the mitzvah? Amar Rav Huna, kiderech. So Rav Huna says, because after all it says, v'lach t'chav aderech, ma derech rishus. Now going on the road is a rishus. For example, a person is traveling on business, af kol rishus. Therefore, the pasuk is implying that any case where a person is doing something of rishus, then he's chayav to interrupt that and say krishma. Af kol rishus. So the same thing, anything else where he's doing rishus. As opposed to somebody who was involved in doing a mitzvah, he's not included in that category. So Gemara says, why? Who says the lech techav aderech means dafka when you're going on your own business affairs or something? Mi lo yaskin into ka'ozel of thy mitzvah. After all, you could equally have where a person is on a derech to go and do a mitzvah, a bris, a korban pesach, etc., etc. The Ka'amar Rahman al-Likri, and yet the Pasuk would be saying that he has to say Kriyashma. So maybe actually even the Oisik the mitzvah, even when he's traveling on the way to do a mitzvah, which is part of the process of doing the mitzvah, maybe he's still chayev. The answer is, in Cain, if that was what it meant, that he's not potter because he's Oisik the mitzvah, le makra b'sheves uveleches. Then the Pasuk didn't have to add the cha to the end of each of these words. It could have said, b'sheves v'vesecha, in sitting in your house, uveleches baderech, and when you're walking on the road. My b'shiv techa, uvelech techa, what does it mean? In your sitting and in your walking, implies b'leches didachu d'machayves, when you chayev, when it's your going, when you're going for something that is optional that you decided to go. Ha-b'leches, the mitzvah, p'tiras, implying that if you're going on the road to do a mitzvah, then you're potter. So that's where we learn it from the fact that it says b'shiv techa and uvelech techa. Okay. So the question is, nu, so if you're saying that a person is potter from mitzvahs, from other mitzvahs, when he's doing one mitzvah, then he should be potter even if he's marrying an almana. Why is it that we said only by psula is he potter and by an almana he's chayev? The answer is, koinus is a psula torid. The answer is, when he's marrying a psula, then he's distracted. He's thinking about the ilas mitzvah. She's still a psula. He has to think how he's going to do it gently. He's concerned about the question whether she is a psula or not, and that distracts him, as opposed to an almana, loy torid, a koinus almana, loy torid. When he's marrying an almana, he doesn't have that kind of preoccupation. Therefore, he can accomplish both. As we said before, as Tosfos and other Rishonim said, we don't say osik b'mitzvah potam and mitzvah is not a blanket petter. It's when doing the second mitzvah is going to distract him or prevent him from doing the first one. When he's marrying an almana, there's no problem with that because the tirda that he has is not of the magnitude that will prevent him from saying Shema. He can set aside that tirda for the time at least it takes to say the first pasuk of Shema. Tosfos points out on Amud Beis that the fact is that you really only need full kavana during the first pasuk of Shema. So for that, he can set aside his tirda for a moment. As opposed to a basula, or actually we're saying, by an amana, he's not even that totered in the first place, because there's nothing for him to be totered about as far as the Be'ilas Mitzvah. Okay.
To be Yotzeh Kriyas Shema, how many sukim do you need? Do you need a stroke?
Yotzeh on a Daraisa level, he needs to have Kavana during the first Pasuk. During the first Pasuk and no more than that. But now what we're saying is, it's not even that we're telling him to set aside his tirda. What we're saying now is that when it comes to marrying an almana, there is no tirda in the first place. And the tirda is how am I going to do the Be'ilas Mitzvah in a way that will minimize her pain? And what am I going to do if it turns out that she's not a Basula, etc.? By an almana, you don't have any of those considerations. Therefore, he doesn't have tirda in the first place. Therefore, he's chayav in Kriyashma, just like anybody else. So right now, the Gemara's assumption is that any time a person has tirda, any time a person has some kind of mental preoccupation, then it's going to pater him from Shema. So that brings to the question, so you're telling me whenever a person is preoccupied with something, then he's potter from Kriya Shema. Elameata, by that logic, what if a person's ship sank in the sea, the torid, he's certainly very distracted and very preoccupied with that, about the tremendous loss that he just suffered. Hokinami de potter, are you telling me that then he's potter from saying Kriya Shema? Obviously not. Now maybe you're going to answer, maybe la halacha, anytime a person has such a terrible disaster or something that happened to him or a terrible preoccupation, then he's potter from Kriya Shema. But no. And he certainly is distracted and preoccupied because a close relative of his just passed away. Yet he's chayev in all the mitzvahs in the Torah, chutz min ha-tfilin, with the exception of tfilin, sharenema ben pe'er, because tfilin are called pe'er, a glorious thing, and therefore an oval is not the kind of person who should be wearing pe'er, because Rashi over here explains that when he's putting on tefillin, it's like he's demonstrating that he's not an oval. Tosfos explains, actually later on in the sugya, we're going to explain that Hashem specifically told Yechezkel at a certain time to wear tefillin, even though by rights he shouldn't have, implying that everybody else in Avelos is potter. In various other places, Rashi explains that an oval is like his glory is rolling around in the dust, so it's not appropriate for him to, at such a time, to be wearing tefillin. L'maisa, the halacha is, the Gemara actually discusses in Moed Katan the details, how long is an oval potter from tefillin. The halacha is he's really only potter on the first day. So on the day of until after the burial itself, he's potter. After that, he's chayev again. But in any case, so we see that an oval is chayev in all the other mitzvahs. And Tosfos explains, this is why we need to stress that tefillin is pe'er, otherwise we would have thought that once we say he's potter from tefillin, maybe he should be potter from other mitzvahs as well, but no, tefillin have a special reason why he should be potter. Anyway, the point is that we see that an oval, even though he has tirda, is chayev in all mitzvahs. So you see that tirda is not a good enough reason to pater him from Shema. So we're back to the question then, why is there a difference between somebody who's marrying a basula and somebody who's marrying an almana? The answer is Hocha Torin Tirda de Mitzvah. The answer is when it comes to the Chosen, who's about to marry a Basula, his distraction is regarding a mitzvah, the Bi'ilas mitzvah, which is, after all, a mitzvah. As opposed to when a person is an oval or when a person's ship sank, it's only a tirda of reshus. It's an optional tirda. Meaning Rashi says he does have to act, he does have to follow the rules of Avelus, but on the other hand, but he's not actually chayev to feel pain inside. Now, we don't necessarily mean, obviously, one way of understanding that, Rashi could conceivably mean that a person is yotzer, the dinim of Avelos, even if they don't actually feel sad inside, they do the external manifestations of Avelos. That is one way of understanding Rashi. And the fact is, we have an example of that. It says in Halacha, let's say, that if a person passes away, Rachman al-Islam, and they don't have any relatives or anybody to sit Shiva for them, then you get 10 regular people to sit Shiva for him. Now, those people are not related to him at all. The pashtus, they're not going to be feeling such tsar. Nevertheless, they still have to sit there and prava avelos on his behalf. So we see that avelos doesn't necessarily involve an inner feeling. Anyway, so that's one way of looking at it. The other way is, yeah, of course it involves an inner feeling. You know, your relative passed away. You're expected to, you're gonna feel bad for it. But nevertheless, it's a reshus in the sense that you can still set it aside for the short time that it says that it takes to say at least the first parasha of Shema, and then go back to that feeling. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, so on the other hand, when it comes to, so in other words, we have as follows. When a person has tirda, when a person has this mental distraction and mental preoccupation, if it's because of a mitzvah, then that patters him from other mitzvahs where doing the other mitzvah would interfere with what he's doing now. Therefore, a chosin who's about to marry a b'sula is potter from Krishma. If he has a tirda, but it's a tirda of reshus, where he can be expected to set it aside for a little while, then he's still chayev in other mitzvahs. So an example of that is an oval, and another example of that is a person whose ship sank and he lost a fortune. And then you have, of course, a person who has no tirda at all is, of course, chayev. That would be the example of the person who marries an amana, where there's no tirda at all because he's not preoccupied at all with how he's going to do the bi'ilas mitzvah. Okay. So from there we learn, the concept that oistik mitzvah, potter min mitzvah, that while he's occupied with one mitzvah, then he's potter from other mitzvahs. So the Gemara asks, well, oistik mitzvah, potter min mitzvah, mehocha nafka? You're telling me you're learning it from here, from this thing about krishma and achosin? Mehosim nafka? We have a whole different place where we learn this concept from. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk tells us in Parashas Va'aloscha, by he anoshim asher hayu tmeim lenefesh adam v'gomer, there were people who were tamei by human life, they had become tamei mess, and they couldn't bring the korban Pesach, and they came to Moshe to ask what to do, and Hashem told Moshe the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni. So who oistim anoshim mi hayu? Who were those people? Now, the Ritva asks an interesting question. What do you mean, who were those people? Do we even need to ask? I mean, you have a nation of 600,000 men between 20 and 60, plus the Levim, plus women, plus children, plus the Erev Rav, in a large nation like that of several million. Sure, you're going to have people are dying here and there, and you're going to have people that are coming this. Why does the Gemara even need to ask the question? So the Ritva answers briefly, and the Orach Haner answers in greater detail that what it is because the question that they asked Moshe, as we're going to see as we go along, was very sophisticated. It wasn't just they were saying, we're Tomei, we can't bring the Korban Pesach, what do we do? There were nuances in their question that show us that they were great Chachamim. So therefore, the Gemara is asking, so obviously they weren't Stam run-of-the-mill Jews. Who were they that they were such distinguished people that they could come up with such a strong argument? So the first explanation is Noisei Arenish or Yosef Payo Divir Rabbi Yosef Agrili. Rabbi Yosef Agrili says they were the people who carried Yosef's coffin throughout the years in the desert. So therefore, they became Tom and Ness from that. Rabbi Akiva, I'm a Mishal of El Tzafan, are you? Rabbi Akiva says, no, they were Mishal and El Tzafan, show your Oiskin Minodav Aviyu. They became Tomei when they carried out Nodav and Aviyu's bodies, when they died inside the Mishkan, and they had to carry their bodies out. Actually, Tosfos brings over here, there were two different opinions in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, what happened to Nodav and Aviyu. One opinion, we know that they died with a fire, Batetze Eish Milipne Hashem, but what did that fire do to them? Everybody agrees and that it killed them, and everybody agrees that their clothes were still intact, because when it says that actually that Moshe called Mishal and Al-Safan to carry them out, it says by Yisom B'chutanoisam, they carried them in their ksonas, so that means, in other words, that they're still, they're able to, the ksonas is still intact. What happened to their bodies? The Gemara there in Sanhedrin has two different opinions. One is that only their neshamas were burned, not their bodies. In other words, the fire went inside them and killed them from the inside, but their bodies remained completely intact. So then, according to that, obviously, Mishael and Al-Safan became Tomei when they carried them. The other opinion is over there, though, that their bodies were also burned. So then the question is, Tosfos says, in that case, how are Mishael and Al-Safan becoming Tomei anyhow? You don't know, ashes of a mess are not Matame. And the answer is, Tosfos says, we have to say, evidently, that their skeletons still were intact, even according to that opinion. And when the skeleton is intact, or not even shildo is the expression, doesn't necessarily mean the skeleton, it just means like the form of the body, then it still is Matame, even though it's ashes. So therefore, they would have become Tomei from that. Okay. Anyway. So far those are two opinions. Rabbi Yitzchak says no. It can't be that it was the people who carried Yosef's coffin or the people who carried Nadav and Abihu. Im nosei aronos or Yosef hayu. If they were the ones who carried Yosef's coffin, kvar hayu yicholim l'tahor, they would have long since been able to become tahor, because the last time this took place still while they were at Har Sinai, this took place in Nisan of the second year of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They had arrived at Har Sinai on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, the previous year. They remained there at Har Sinai until the 20th of Iyar of that year, and then they started traveling again. So at this point, when we're talking about the dinim of Pesach, and we're talking about the dinim of the Korban Pesach and Pesach Sheni, it's already about 10 months since they last camped. There's no reason these people would have been handling Yosef's bones and Yosef's coffin all this time. So they would have had plenty of time to become Tahor. Im Mishal v'Al-Tzafan hayu, and if it was Mishal and Al-Tzafan, also Yechol hayu the Tahor. They also could have become Tahor, because when did that take place? Rosh Chodesh Nissan, the 8th day of the Miluim. The next day, Beis Nissan, is when the first Paradroma was prepared. And from then until Pesach, you still have more than enough time for everybody to get sprinkled with Paradroma water and be Tahor. So if it was Mishal and Al-Tzafan, why all of a sudden on Erev Pesach are they realizing we have a problem? Ella, sort of Yitzchok says, Oiskin Mimes Mitzvah Hayu. What it was is these people, how did they become Tomei? They were involved in burying a mes mitzvah. Now, strictly speaking, a mes mitzvah is somebody who passes away where there's nobody else around to bury them. Rashi says that's not necessarily what we're talking about over here. The fact is that even a person's own relative is considered, in a certain sense, a mes mitzvah, because a person has a mitzvah to be involved in the burial of their relatives. Of their close relatives, the same ones that a Kohen can become Tomei to, the same ones that a Kohen has to become Tomei to. So they were Tomei with a relative of theirs that had passed away. Now what happened was the seventh day of their Tuma came out on Erev Pesach. What happened was, in other words, when did the burial of this Mes Mitzvah take place? Rabbi Yitzchok says it took place on Ches Nissan. By the way, there is an interesting thing. There is, I think, Mechilter or something that brings an opinion, I believe it about Kiva, although I don't remember, that actually says, you know, like this, we usually say the Miluim of the Mishkan began on Chof Gimel Adar, and Rosh Chodesh Nissan was the eighth day of the Miluim, and that was the day Nadav and Abihu passed away. The Medrash actually brings an opinion that the Miluim actually began on Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and Ches Nissan was the eighth day, and that's the day that Nadav and Abihu passed away. So according to that, that could fit with Rav Yitzchok's opinion over here as well. Anyway, going back to the Gemara over here, so Rabbi Yitzchak is saying these people became Tomei on Ches Nissan. So their seventh day, therefore, is Yudalad Nissan. Shenemar, the Pesach says, they were not able to make the Pesach on that day, implying by Yemahu and Yecholim Lasses. Only because it was that day were they not able to bring the Korban Pesach. Ha, Lemacho Yecholim Lasses. But if Pesach had been one day later, they would have been able to. So now, actually, the Gemara explains in Pesachim and the different Mefarshim talk about the details over here is, so what it is like this. The question is, if a person is Tomei only for a day, do we say that right now, at the time of, let's say, for example, the classic case is a person became Tomei by a Sheretz. whereby a sheretz, all he needs to do is he needs to go to the mikveh, and then that evening already, he's going to leave that night, head of Shemesh, and he'll be fine. He'll be tahor. So now, the Gemara in Pesachim brings a machlokes about whether shechtin the zirkin al tmei sheretz. Can you shecht the Korban Pesach and sprinkle the blood on behalf of somebody who became tamei from a sheretz? Do we say, no good, because right now he's still tamei, or do we say that's fine? Or do we say that's fine because tonight already he's going to be tahor and he's going to be able to eat Korban Pesach? So now, we're saying over here that, so the Rabbi Yitzchak over here holds, Ein Shechtin V'Zerkin Al Tmei Sheretz, you cannot do that. So therefore, even though tonight they would be Tahor, but today they're still Tomei, and therefore Moshe tells them, you have to make Pesach Sheni. Tosfos actually, Pesachim discusses an interesting point in that. I mean, so in other words, the same thing is over here. Here they're similar to a Tomei Sheretz because they've already been sprinkled the second time with Paradroma water. At this point, all they need is to dip in the mikveh and have hair shemesh, and then they're good. Tosfos actually in Pesachim asks why don't they go to the mikveh and they'll be tahor, and then at this point they're only a tzvulyoim, and even if we say you can't shech for a Tomei Sheretz, you could for a tzvulyoim. So Tosfos over there answers actually that the question came up. You're right, the question came up before they toibled. But so Moshe is telling them, if you don't toible today, then you're going to have to bring Pesach Sheni. But they still have a way out. The Rambam actually has an interesting shita on it. The Rambam learns that a Tomei Nes is different in that regard than a Tomei Sheretz. Even though it's perfectly true that once a person has been sprinkled the second time with Parah Adroma water on the seventh day, practically speaking, that what they have to do at that point is exactly the same as what a Tomei Sheretz has to do. All they need to do is dip in the mikveh and have head of shemesh. Nevertheless, the Rambam learns, based on this Gemara and the parallel Gemara in Pesachim, that no, when it comes to a tamei nes, that doesn't work. And even though he's already been sprinkled, and even though he's already toveled, still he's pushed off from Pesach Sheni that day. And we're saying that it's our last day of tumah. Shouldn't we be able to bring the Korban Pesach? And Moshe tells them no, Pesach Sheni. So now we see, by the way, from this whole discussion that it was quite a sophisticated argument that they had, that they were arguing that was similar to a Tomei Sheretz, and it should be allowed, and so on and so forth. And therefore, that's what brought the Gemara to ask before, who were these people? Because they must have been great people to come up with such arguments. Anyway, the point is that nevertheless, we see they were oisik b'mitzvah. On Ches Nissen, they were oisik in the mitzvah of burying a relative of theirs, even though that prevented them from doing the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. So you see from there that oisik b'mitzvah, potam in a mitzvah. In fact, the Aruch HaNer teaches out that in a way, what it is they're coming and complaining to Moshe. They're saying to Moshe, it's all your fault, Moshe. You were the one who told us when our relatives passed away on Ches Nissen that we personally should be involved in burying them rather than delegating it to our wives or our children or somebody else. So now it's kind of all your fault that we can't bring the Korban Pesach. What do we do? And Moshe asks Hashem, and Hashem tells him, Pesach Sheni. There is, by the way, a sicha from Tavshin Yud, so within the first few months after the Friedrich Rebbe had passed away, before the Rebbe had officially assumed the Nesius, there was a sicha, Pesach Sheni, where the Rebbe shtelled zech on this Gemara and says, you see from it the lesson, according to the opinion that they were oisik b'mes mitzvah, we're saying, in other words, there are times when you're being, as like we're saying over here in the Gemara, you're oisik in a mes mitzvah, you're oisik in being, in helping another yid who might be beruchnius dead and bringing him back to life and bringing him back to mitzvahs. So if that means that right now you're not going to be able to go to the highest levels yourself, you're going to have to take time out from your own high levels of avodah, do it. Just like we're told these people were told to do. And if we say, according to the opinion, that it was Aronish or Yosef, then Yosef represents the Friedrich Rebbe. And in other words, the idea is when a person needs to be Yosef in the Shlichos of the Friedrich Rebbe and of our Rebbe, even in preference to like this, they could have sat by themselves and reached higher and higher levels in Torah and in Chassidus. Nevertheless, they're obligated to do that for the sake of another Yid and for the sake of the Rebbe's Inyan. Okay. Anyway,
if you say that for the Korban Pesach, that, you know, your Torah b'mitzvahs and another mitzvah, you could say that for anything else. For, you know, hearing the shofar or eating matzah.
That's what we said that if that's what we said, that if a person, that's what we said on Amud Aleph, right at the beginning of the Sugya, if doing the other mitzvah is going to prevent him or hinder him from doing the other mitzvah, then he's potter. If not, for example, that's what Tosfos is saying. We don't say a person is wearing tzitzis, therefore he's potter from other mitzvahs. So the same thing. No. Let's say, for example, a person is on the way to do a mitzvah, but on the way, without there being any delay in it at all, he can hear shofar. Then by all means, he has to hear shofar.
Is that the halacha? That if he's tarud in a mitzvah, he's patur from shofar?
In principle, yes. Think of it, for example. Imagine you have a Hatzalah person. He's on his way to save somebody's life. If that means because of that, he's not going to be able to hear shofar, so be it.
That's pikuach nefesh. That's different.
The point still remains that, yes, if a person is osik b'mitzvah and stopping to hear shofar is going to delay him or whatever, then yes, he's potter min ha-mitzvah. Okay, let's go on. So anyway, so the question is why we need two different places to learn this from. If we already have that we're learning it from, if we're learning it from the chassan, then why do we also have to learn it from the people with the korban pesach or vice versa? So the answer is the Gemara says tzricha. We need both of them. To iashmi in chassan, if we were only told about the case of the people with the korban pesach, he would say, you know why in that case they're potter mishum delay motas man chiyuva de pesach, because when they're told to be matamel mes, at that point it's not yet the time of the chiyuva pesach. It was only ches nisim, and according to the other opinions it was even earlier. Nevertheless, we're saying that, so therefore we're saying in that case we tell them do the other mitzvah. It means when erev pesach comes there's going to be a problem. Fine, but that's 6 days from now. That's not our concern right now. That's not really a valid reason to pass to them from the first mitzvah. Aval hocha, but when it comes to the chosen, demotas man krishma, let's say the time of krishma already came, and while he's there in the chuppah, while he's there during the wedding, so now is the time to do it, emalo, you wouldn't have known that he's potter from the mitzvah. Therefore, tzricha, therefore we need the drasha about the chosen, even when the mitzvah is chal right then. The Iyashmin and Hocha, on the other hand, if we were only told about the Chosin, you would say, you know why? Mishum de like a Kores, because after all, Kriyashma is a mitzvah's essay. There's no Kores for failing to do it. Avol Hosam de Ika Kores, but when it comes to failing to bring the Korban Pesach where there is Kores, Eimalo, you wouldn't know that Osef mitzvah potim in a mitzvah, therefore Tzricha, so therefore we need it in that case also. Next, Gufa, the Gemara says, getting back to something we said before, Amar of Abba Bazav de Amar Rab, Obol Chayev b'chol ha-mitzvahs ha-muris b'Torah. We said that an Obol is Chayev in all the mitzvahs that it says in the Torah chutz mitzvilin, with the exception of tzvilin, Shari Nema ben Pe'er, because the tzvilin are called glory. And where do we see they're called glory, and where do we see that an Obol shouldn't wear them? Because of what Hashem tells Yechezkel. So in Sefer Yechezkel, Hashem tells him at one point, here's what's going to happen. Your wife is going to pass away. You are not to follow the usual rules of Avedus. And one of them is, as the Gemara is going to quote the Pasuk, that Hashem tells him where you're tefillin, implying that an Avo usually doesn't. The point is, when people ask him, why are you not doing the regular things of Avedus, you're going to explain to them, Yechezkel, that soon there's going to be the Churban if the Jewish people don't do tshuva, and the catastrophe of it is going to be so much that people are not even going to be mourning for their individual mason, because it's going to be like a general mourning for the whole Jewish people rather than each person sitting shiva for their own mason. They're just going to be numbed by the magnitude of the disaster. And therefore, see, Yechezkel says, I'm doing this for you as an example to illustrate to you what it's going to be like for you when you hear that news that the Beis Mikdash was destroyed and that this relative and that relative of yours were killed, etc. So Hashem tells Yechezkel, Pe'ercha chavoy shalach avagremer, you should wear your pe'er on you, pe'er meaning tefillin, implying, atu demachayvis, only you are chayev in tefillin when you're an oval. Because I'm telling you, Avakula Almuptiri. But everybody else, when they're in Oval, or like we said, the first day, would be Potter from Tefillin. However, so now the Gemara says, Bahani Mili, B'yom Rishon. Now that applies only on the first day. Dichtiv V'achrisa K'yom Mar. Because the Pasuk describes it, the after effect of it is like a bitter day. So in other words, the first day after the Misa is particularly bitter. Not really the first day after the death. It's really the first day after the burial. So then the bitterness and the bitterness of the Avelos is particularly intense. So then the Ovel is parted from Tefillin. But the rest of the day he's chayav. Okay. Another din. The Omer of Abba Zavra Omer Rab, Ovel chayav the Sukkah. And Ovel is chayav just getting the Sukkah just like everybody else. So the question is, Pshita, isn't that obvious? We said an Ovel is chayav in all the mitzvahs except for Tefillin. Why would Sukkah be any different? The answer is Maru de Tema. Without Rav Abba Bar Zavda telling us, we would have said Hoyo v'Omer of Abba Bar Zavda Omer Rav. Since we have another fact that Rav Abba Bar Zavda told us in the name of Rav, Mitzdayer Potter min Sukkah, that a person who's feeling discomfort is Potter from Sukkah, and we'll talk about that in more detail tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Hai Nami Mitzdayerhu. You would argue that the oval is also Mitzdayer. And therefore, he should be Potter from Sukkah. Kamash Malan, therefore, if Abba Zavda wants us to know that he's Potter, that he's still Chayev, because Hani Mili Tzara Dememela. When do we say a Mitzara is Potter from Sukkah? Is where it's a Tzara that comes on its own, meaning that it comes through something of sitting in the Sukkah is what's causing him the Tzara. For example, Rashi says, it's too hot, it's too cold, it smells bad or whatever. We'll talk about those dinim in more detail tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Aval Hacha, but over here you could argue with the Oval. Not only you could argue, but the Halacha is, since Iuhu to come at Tzar Nafshe, since the Oval is the one who's making himself feel Tzar by being preoccupied with his mess, Iboila, the Asuvedaite, so what we're telling him is he has to calm himself down and go sit in the Sukkah. So actually, so now, in what sense is he mitzayer from the sukkah that he would feel better in the house? So the Rosh explains, because an Ovel, if he's feeling so bad, an Ovel would prefer to be able to sit in the dark and be able to sit alone. And therefore, and now he's being told to go sit in a brightly lit sukkah together with other people. So therefore, that's a tzayer for him, and you would have thought that he's potter. Nevertheless, we're saying he still has to overcome his thoughts and still go into the sukkah. And in fact, the Ritva says a beautiful thing on it. He says, in fact, the idea is the Ovel, when the fact that he's not going to go into the Sukkah, like the Rosh is saying, he's thinking, I'd rather sit in the dark or something. He's thinking to himself, how can I go into a Sukkah, which is a festive place, and there's people over there, but let him go in, let him overcome that first hesitation of his and go in. And then the Simcha of the Sukkah will actually have an effect on him, and he will feel so much better. So that's why he's chayev in sukkah, precisely in order to get him in a more yom tov dikah mood. Okay. The Amar of Abba Bar Zavda, Amar Rav, another din of Abba Bar Zavda says in the name of Rav, Chosan, the Chosan himself, Vashushvinin, and his close friends. Shushvinin really means more than just close friends. It really means the people who help him make the wedding, and Yabdinim and Baba Basra about reciprocity, about how they're obligated to invite him to their wedding, and he's obligated to invite them to his, and so forth. So it means really, really close friends that are involved in the wedding. V'chol b'nei ha-chuppah, and everybody else who is involved in the chuppah, in the simcha of the wedding, p'turim in ha-sukkah, kol shiva, they are potter from sukkah, throughout the 7 days of Sukkot. Now, we don't mean the 7 days. Obviously, you didn't get married during Sukkot itself. You're not allowed to. So we mean, in other words, he got married right before Sukkot, a couple of days before Sukkot, and his Sheva Barachas extends into Sukkot. So as long as the Sheva Barachas is going on, then all of that group is potter, because they're oisik for mitzvah, because they're involved in the mitzvah. The Gemara asked my timer, and the reason is, Mishum Deboi Lamechti, because they need to be happy. So the question is, so v'leichol v'sukkah v'lechol v'sukkah. So they can just as well have the Sheva Barachas party in the sukkah, and they can be happy together in the sukkah. And the answer is no. Ein simcha ela b'chuppah. The real simcha is only in the chuppah. Is so Tosfos explains the definition of chuppah is not really the definition that we use nowadays. The canopy that we put up for the wedding itself. The real definition of chuppah is the place that's reserved for the chosen and kala throughout the 7 days. Like this is it's like the yichud room that we have nowadays, but more than that, like the idea was in those days, the chosen and kala would spend the entire 7 days in that area, in that room, and everybody would come to visit there. So that's the chuppah. So the main simcha is over there. Different Rishonim talk about that not necessarily the definition of chuppah can be a little more expansive than that. It can be the place where you hold the Sheva Barachas, in which case it could be different places, but nevertheless, the point is the simcha is only over there. So the question is, so what? Fine, so let them eat the meal in the sukkah, and then they'll rejoice together in the chuppah. The answer is, ein simcha ala b'makom suda. The answer is, the real simcha is going to be where the suda is taking place. So therefore, so they need the suda itself to be in the chuppah. So the question is, v'lev the chuppah b'sukkah, nu, why don't they just make the chuppah, transfer the chuppah to the sukkah, have the chassan and talis special place be in the sukkah throughout the 7 days of sukkah, so throughout the rest of the Sheva Berachos. So what's wrong with that? So here we have two answers. Abaya omer mishum yichud. Abaya says the problem with that is yichud. The chassan at some point may have to leave the sukkah, which now we're saying is the chuppah as well, to go to the bathroom. Meanwhile, you're going to have somebody else who's going to be alone with the kala, and there would be a problem of yichud. The Rava Omar mishum tsar chassan. Rava says it's because of the disturbance of the chassan, namely that the sukkah is small. And usually in those times, sukkahs were only three walls, so it's completely open on one side. So the chassan and kala have no privacy over there like this. They want to be able to sit together and talk and joke and whatever together. And they can't because one wall of it is open. So the Gemara says, my benayah, what's the practical difference between those two explanations? So the answer is, ikibanayah, just shchichi inchi dinati ba'ayla lahasam. What if you have constantly other people who are going in and out of the sukkah? Lamanda Omar Mishum Yichud, according to the opinion that's a problem of Yichud, that the Kala is going to be alone with one other man, Lecha, there's no problem because people are always coming and going. Lamanda Omar Mishum Tsar Chosen Ika, but according to the opinion that there's the Tsar of the Chosen, then sure, you have that problem because people are always coming in and out, and therefore he and the Kala have no privacy. This that we're saying, Yichud, by the way, is not so simple that we mean real Yichud, because usually you have the halacha baila ba'ir, that the husband is in town, then there's no problem of Yichud, and obviously here he is, he only went out to go to the bathroom. So therefore, so one explanation is, what we mean is, there's not an actual problem of technical Yichud, but there is, the chassan is gonna start second guessing himself. My kala was alone for a little while with somebody else, When I wasn't there, when I was going to the bathroom, is there maybe something going on? He's going to start getting nervous and it's going to affect his shalom bias with his kala. The other explanation is that the halacha is, the heter of baila ba'ir doesn't apply when libay gaspa, when you have somebody who's particularly on good terms, on close terms with the kala. Here we're talking about the shushvinin, who again are members of the wedding party. They help contribute towards the expenses of the wedding. Eventually they're going to invite the chassan and kala to their weddings, etc. And therefore, that might be a reason to say that then there shouldn't be yichud with them, even when the chassan is in town like this, where he just left for a couple of minutes. Okay. However, the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rav Zeira, I'm not achli the sukkah v'chodi v'chuppah. I got married shortly before sukkahs. I ate my meals in the sukkah, and I had the rejoicing of the Sheva Berachos in the chuppah, or someplace else, and it didn't matter. Usually we say that there's simcha only where the meal is, but in my case, v'choshekin d'chadi liboy, all the more so, I was happier, d'chad didn't attack because I'm able to accomplish both the mitzvah of Sheva Berachos, of simchas chos and akala, as well as the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, some of the Rishonim say that that doesn't mean the halacha is like Rav Zeira. The halacha is that a chosin is potter. Like we're saying Rav Zeira was extra machmir on himself. There are a couple of the poskim who say that this does indicate the halacha is like Rav Zeira. Nowadays, it's a whole different matter anyway, because nowadays, in particular, our sukkahs have four walls. We don't build three-wall sukkahs anymore like they used to. So therefore, there is the ability to have privacy in the sukkah. Therefore, a chassan and kala are in fact chayiv in sukkah during the seven days of Sheva Berachos, and everybody else is as well. And therefore, when they're going to have Sheva Berachos, it's going to be in the sukkah. Okay. And we'll continue on this topic of a chassan and about different things, about different details about oisik mitzvah, chassan mitzvah. We'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.